You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Yes, and for Dear Science, we are joined, as I said earlier, by our expert once again, Professor Alan Blackman.
Always makes me laugh when you say that, but I can't let this moment go without telling the listening audience that this is Castor's last Tuesday Wire.
Yeah, so I guess my last time calling you an expert, though it will remain to be true, certainly after my departure from the Tuesday Wire.
Oh.
Yes, and our last Dear Science, which we've got some cracking stories to get to. Cracking. I guess that's the noise electricity makes.
Yes. I think that's nice.
Yeah, you segued well there. And peeling tape creating chemical reactions. What is even going on here?
This is absolutely nuts. Well, let's go back to 2010 and the Nobel Prize in Physics, which was a bit of a surprise to people because it was awarded for a method of making this thing called graphene.
Graphene.
Okay, so we all know graphite.
Yes.
Don't we? Okay, so that's pencil lead. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you take graphite, big sheet of graphite, and you put sticky tape on it, and you peel off the sticky tape, off the graphite, you get this single layer of graphite, basically. It's one atom thick.
Right.
And it looks like chicken wire, basically. A whole bunch of hexagons, looks like chicken wire, and they get it by putting sticky tape on graphite and peeling it off.
Sounds fairly simple.
This graphene is quite amazing stuff, but these guys won the Nobel Prize for basically using sticky tape.
It sounds easy enough.
And, of course, everybody wished that they'd thought of that first. And so sticky tape has uses, and so some people have been doing some recent experiments with sticky tape, so some folks in China and the US. And what they have shown is that when you peel a roll of sticky tape and you do it quite fast, you can generate some incredibly intense electric fields. Remarkable.
Right.
Absolutely remarkable. And in fact, what you can do is generate a thing called micro lightning.
That sounds fun. I'd assume it's because they're like the static sort of similar to rubbing a balloon on your hair.
Right? Yeah, indeed. I mean, more amazing still. So this has been known for quite some time, in fact. So way back in 1939, you go back then, and it was found that you could get luminescence. So if you peel a sticky tape in a dark room, you'll see light.
That's fun.
Okay, so that means that, some large energies are involved there in order to generate light. You're generating excited atoms, which then generate light. And more amazing, and I did not know this, so in 2008... they found, and this just boggles the mind, that when you peel tape, you can actually generate X-rays. Now, X-rays are ridiculously high energy beasties. And so that sort of shows that what's going on when you're peeling tape is quite remarkable.
We're doing a bit of science in the home.
And absolutely. So X-rays, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
Oh, so what studies have shown is that when you are peeling the tape, the adhesive side, the side with the sticky stuff on it, that becomes positively charged, okay? And then when you get a charge imbalance, then that's when we get things like lightning and, all that sort of stuff, okay? And so that comes out a result of these massive, massive, massive electric fields that you can get when you peel the tape at a decent rate. And it's also apparently the reason why when you're taking a bandage off, if you do it, the pain comes from that, or part of the pain comes from that as well. But we're talking big, big electric fields. We're talking a billion volts per meter.
Ow. So that does sound like one of the bad ones, right? You wouldn't want to be in contact with that.
No, you absolutely wouldn't. So then what happens is that positive charge ionizes the air. So you form ions in the air. You're ripping electrons off things, and then all of a sudden they sort of recombine, and bam, you get this big clap of lightning. Now, obviously we're not getting big claps of lightning when we're pulling the tape off, but that's what's actually happening. So these researchers in China and the States decided to investigate this more closely. And so they're using very, very, very high-tech equipment to measure just how big these electric fields are. And also what chemical species you get when you do this peeling in sort of in the area of the tape itself. So they're using, as I say, very, very high-tech stuff. And they basically found that they could easily, in fact, easily generate enough energy to drive a chemical reaction just using peeling tape.
Wow.
It just absolutely boggles the mind. So X-rays, they're finding X-rays of about 100,000 electron volts. And for comparison, to drive a chemical reaction, you need about 10 electron volts.
So we're well over.
So, you know, just this physical process of just peeling tape, absolutely astonishing.
You'd never realise it.
No,
wow.
No, had no idea.
Incredible stuff.
Remarkable. Yep.
In this next story about talcum cancer, I overstated or understated it, I guess. There's a bit more to it than just the talcum, the cancer here.
Well, there is, and it's a long story, so sit tight, those of you out there listening. So in 2020, there was a paper published, and it had the very snappy title, Mesothelioma Associated with the Use of Cosmetic Talc. Now, I'm sure everybody listening has heard of talcum powder.
Obviously.
It's one of those things that gets used as much as sticky tape.
Yeah. Oh, very nice, very nice. And so this paper in 2020 was published in a thing called the Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine, and the authors were a bunch of folk from upstate New York, okay, and also from Mount Sinai as well. So, lawyers for a very, very large pharmaceutical company, who we're not going to name, just in case, they have, in the last couple of months, asked for this paper to be retracted. Okay. And for a paper to be retracted, generally what you need to show is that the material in the paper is fraudulent.
You've got to show it's wrong, right?
It's wrong, or it's been made up, or whatever, demonstrably incorrect. All of those sorts of things. So, you ask, might this company be doing this? Well, said company is in the process of being sued by thousands of people for literally billions of dollars for supposedly supplying talcum powder that was contaminated with asbestos.
Oh.
Okay, and we all know that asbestos is not good. And asbestos apparently leads to this cancer, mesothelioma. Okay.
Right.
So, the study in the paper was of 33 people, or 33 cases, let's say, of malignant mesothelioma. And what the participants all had in common was that they had not been exposed to any other source of asbestos except for supposedly the stuff that was in the talcum powder, okay? Now, what the authors found was that after they published the paper, they found that one individual had in fact smoked cigarettes that had filters that were contaminated with asbestos. So, so they did have another source of asbestos that they had come into contact with. Okay, and so then the company said, "Well, hang on a minute. You know, we're being sued by these people, and indeed the lead author has been used as an expert witness in some of these cases." Okay, so there lies the sort of the connection. So the big company went to the court, and then the court said, okay, these 33 people, you've got to give us their names. Okay, you've got to make them public.
Right.
Because of the fact that we've got this ongoing litigation and everything, and then the company can then look at these people and see whether any other of them had exposure to asbestos elsewhere other than the talc. And that's not normally a thing that is done.
No, I'd imagine confidentiality is quite important.
Yeah. But, you know, this is court-ordered, so they did this. And now the company, having looked at these names, they now say that there are at least five, I believe, more people who have had other exposures to asbestos. And so this is sort of the reason that they're wanting this paper retracted. Now, so this all comes this all comes down to the head of the poor old journal editor, who probably never comes across something like this in his daily work. This would be very, very, very unusual. So the journal editor has sort of weighed up the pros and the cons and everything. He's looked, and most importantly, what he's looking at is the science itself and how the science was carried out and how it was reported. And basically, he's come to the conclusion that we're not going to retract the paper because, as far as I'm concerned, everything seems to have been above board, done correctly,
yeah, et still cetera, valid. Et
cetera. Yeah, mm. yeah, yeah. And so the lead author, as a result of this, is now being sued by the pharmaceutical company as well. So,
wow.
Again, that's, you know, wow.
It's growing more and more complex.
It is, mm. absolutely it is. And that's sort of where it stands at the moment. So the, you know, the requested retraction has not occurred. The pharmaceutical company is now suing the lead author, and basically there it stands.
Yeah.
Has there not been any other research that's verified these same outcomes?
That's a really good question. Personally, you wouldn't probably want to go near this with a barge pole, really.
I'd imagine, right, I think, yeah.
You know, given what is happening at the moment, and, you know, remember that, you know, companies have very deep pockets, mm-hmm. and, you know, sort of defending yourself against this sort of stuff would be, not a great place to be in.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, somebody needs to look at the truth of all of this, you know. And it needs to be investigated very, very carefully, obviously, because, you know, there are literally, as I say, billions of dollars yeah. involved. 100%. And obviously people's lives have been lost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the question then needs to be asked, was it as a result of this accidental exposure to asbestos that is supposedly in the talcum powder, you know? So, yeah. That's where it is.
Stuff, yeah.
That's where it is. And as we often say, you know, watch the space, more to come, most definitely. Yeah.
And then this last one, something far more common than talc and sticky tape, of course, nitrogen, right?
Nitrogen, absolutely.
Everywhere.
Yes.
And we're making a new one?
We are, yeah. And so nitrogen makes up basically 80% of the air that we breathe. So every breath we take, 4/5 of it is nitrogen, essentially. Okay, so it's an important element. And speaking of elements, we need to define this a term that maybe you might not have heard of. This thing called an allotrope.
Allotrope.
An allotrope, okay. Which are basically different forms of the same element.
Hmm.
Okay, and so the most famous allotrope allotropes that people would know of, and we've already mentioned one of them today, graphite and diamond.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So graphite and diamond are different forms of carbon.
Yeah.
So they're just made up of carbon atoms, but the extraordinary thing is that the carbon atoms are just arranged differently.
Yeah, and so they look more fun.
And in doing that, you go from something that is sort of grey and very, very slippery to something that is transparent and really, really, and the hardest thing that we know,
right?
Basically. And that all has to do simply with the way that the carbon atoms are arranged, which, again, never fails to amaze me. And there are other examples of allotropes as well. Phosphorus might be one that you've heard of. You can get white phosphorus, you can get red phosphorus, you can get black phosphorus, and they all differ, and they've got very, very different properties, just like
graphite. Are these things that you create or that are discovered?
You can do either. I mean, graphite and diamond both exist out there in the real world. So do these allotropes of phosphorus. You can, or more so, you'd tend to make those in the lab very probably. Good old nitrogen. So the only way that we know nitrogen at the moment, or up until a wee while ago, was nitrogen as a gas. And nitrogen as a gas consists of two nitrogen atoms, and they are bonded together with a really, 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 really strong bond.
Got it.
And they exist in bulk as a gas, okay, at room temperature. If you cool it down enough, you can turn it into a liquid, and if you cool it down even further, you can turn it into a solid. But we are familiar with nitrogen as being a gas.
Yeah.
With the chemical formula N2.
N2.
Okay, two atoms of nitrogen
Seems fairly straightforward.
Per molecule.
Yeah.
But now some workers in Germany have decided that, no, they really wouldn't miss their fingers and toes and limbs and stuff like that, and they decided to try and make another allotrope of nitrogen, and they've succeeded, and now they've made nitrogen with a chemical formula N6.
That's fun.
With six atoms of nitrogen.
How does this differ?
How does it differ? Well, it's a solid at not so much room temperature, but certainly at liquid nitrogen temperature. So they cool it down quite a lot.
Right.
At room temperature, it's basically decomposes in milliseconds.
Got it.
But
okay.
If you cool it down, you can get it to basically be relatively stable, and you can make a film of it at 77 Kelvin.
That's okay. Fun.
And so they've basically isolated it, and they've basically shown that, yep, this is the real stuff. So we've made a brand new allotrope of nitrogen. Only trouble is, as would be expected, it is, when it decomposes, it releases a hell of a lot of energy.
Right.
And nitrogen is the basis of pretty much all explosives.
Got it. So that when we're releasing energy, it's not like a fun sort of release of energy. It's a
It's a violent.
Yeah,
yes,
got
yes,
it. Okay.
Yes, it's a violent release of energy because nitrogen desperately wants to form nitrogen molecules N2.
Right.
And it'll do anything that it can. So that's why explosives very often contain lots of nitrogen.
Got it.
And that's why these workers are just crazy, because they've got now molecules that contain 6 nitrogen atoms
yeah.
and nothing else.
And what do you do with that? Like, once, if you want to dispose it, do you just have to let it explode?
Oh, probably just warm it up to room temperature and it'll go, you know?
Got it, right, okay.
It'll be gone.
Is it useful for anything?
Is it useful for anything? Oh, they're talking about energy storage, and they've got to come up with some use for it and everything. But no, it's fundamental chemistry.
Yeah, we've just proven that we can do it.
Awesome. Yeah, exactly. To prove that we can do it, and we're furthering knowledge, basically. So
that's quite fun.
It's nice. It's really nice stuff. And again, I'm amazed that people haven't lost a few fingers and everything to this, because the Germans seem to have a propensity for studying these things with lots of nitrogen in them. And when the stuff decomposes, it releases twice as much energy as the equivalent mass of TNT.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's quite that's quite awesome. Violent.
Just quickly returning back to the tape story.
Yeah.
Someone's asked, does this release of energy happen just with sellotape, or can it be achieved with any kind of adhesive tape, duct tape or packaging tape, for instance?
My guess is that it probably would be for all of them. That's just a guess. Okay?
Yeah.
But my feeling is that that's probably going to be a general sort of thing, any sort of adhesive. Yeah.
And you can always check it up with the original stories on the Dear Science podcast.
Absolutely.
On the BFM website.
Yep.
Which you can catch later today. All right. Well, for the last time, I guess.
Oh, God, no. Here come the tears. Jeez, I'm bad at goodbyes. But thank you, Castor. Yeah. It's been an absolute pleasure working with you. And you always ask those incisive questions that make me go, So,
yeah.
Good luck.
Thank you for coming in this week and over the past year that I've been, or more than a year that I've been doing this. Thank you, as always, to Mojet. And thank you, Science. We'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the B.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.